with everything I do, there is an aspect of representation. And as an artist, that's a kind of a hard pill to swallow.
Welcome to Ladies First with Laura Brown. I'm Laura Brown, editor-in-chief of InStyle magazine. And each week, I'm talking to a legendary lady about what she does, how she does it, and what we can learn from her. We've loved Awkwafina, a.k.a. Nora Lum, from the first time we saw her, heard her, or encountered her. She is a natural, natural performer.
Nora Lum.
Yes.
A.k.a. Awkwafina, a.k.a. Renaissance woman extraordinaire. Welcome to Ladies First, buddy.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Well, look, I want to talk about this past year and where you're at. And also, I like to distill each woman on Ladies First, like you were a fine fragrance. And you know what I think of when I think about you, Nora?
What?
Warmth. Warmth.
Oh, and good.
Obviously, humor, all wit, all the stuff that makes you a performer. But I think what registers is an ease and a comfort in everything that you do, bringing something into the real world. And there's nothing cynical in anything you do.
Oh,
but we're looking at, it's almost 10 years since my vag.
Yeah, it's been 10 years almost.
Have you watched your vag, my vag lately?
I can't get that great of an angle, but I have to get into a kind of a legs akimbo kind of situation. And, you know, like even the camera shits out. But no, I think for anyone, it's hard to watch like your early stuff. You know, when you could definitely like read on your face, like all the things that you were insecure about and all the things that I think at the time that you were worried about, you know? So it's like, it's a weird thing for me. So I don't think I've watched it recently.
What things that you've done in the past few years are you comfortable watching versus ones you're not? Or do you obviously probably don't make a habit of watching yourself all day, but
I think performances where you felt insecure or you felt just kind of like not there yet, I think those are the hardest performances to watch. And then like there's a farewell. That's a different one. I could watch that movie like over and over again for some reason. I don't know. And I don't watch it like I'm in it, which is a weird thing. I watch it for like what it reminded me of like when I was in China that whole time. It, you know, it goes back and forth.
So how has the past year been for you? I mean, number one, hang on, when did you go to Australia exactly?
I was there up until March. Then I was home from March to July.
You've had sort of a strange bifurcated quarantine moment. So you shot the Marvel film in two stints then, I guess, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
You win a Golden Globe, woo, right? And then you go off right after then to shoot this.
I think it was not more than 2 or 3 days later after.
How was your mind then? Because that's a whole conscious cultural shift on how you're seen and your success and the movie you're going to do.
Yeah.
How'd that feel, bud? Was your brain like scrambled egg?
Yeah, I think it was. And I think it was a little like, where am I, right, kind of thing. It was a really bifurcated quarantine because I understood what was happening in America and what we were kind of going through. But then I also saw Australia during the peak of quarantine and then also Canada, like Vancouver. But I think when I got to Australia, it was kind of humbling almost because you go from like, you know, in LA doing press for basically a year for The Farewell and like going to all these places and then it's really exciting and then winning the Globe. And then you go to Australia and, you know, it is like very much like back to work, but then also all of that kind of excitement, it's not really all there. Australia has its own kind of thing going on, you know? So that was different, but good because it was like a grounding period of like back to work.
Oh, yeah, you're back here now. I was talking to Melissa McCarthy and she, both you lucky bitches, were in Australia yeah. for a good chunk of the year. And you can imagine my emotions, but she was saying, oh yeah, you go to like go to Woolies, go to the supermarket. And
oh, you go to Woolies, yeah. You go to Coles.
Go to Coles. And she'll be like, people just will talk to me about like soup. She's like, everybody there's so chatty. And I was like, well, do they know who you are? And she said, some, but like, how is it with you? But when you got down there, how recognized were you? What were your interactions like?
I loved Australia. I love Sydney. I think what maybe what Melissa McCarthy is describing is like that they're friendly, you know, and like, you know, they will talk to you and stuff like that. But I was recognized a couple times, like when I'd go to the Westfield by like kind of like younger Asian Australian kids would recognize me a lot. But then like other people, it's like, I don't think I could even really, they had no, like they were just like, why? Why? Who are? Like what? Like what? What are you? Like why?
It's important that people just come up to you and just go, why?
Yeah, just like why? You know.
So the whole year again, and so you're doing three different places, picking up two bits of a film. Obviously, it's good to work during this time, because it's a very isolating time. But what were your sort of ups and downs of that? Like when you weren't working, did you sink a little bit, or were you productive? Or walk me through like Marvel to sitting in a room to Marvel to Nora from Queens, like, you know, and then quarantining all that time.
For me, it was like an introspective look into what really matters in my life, because no matter what, we were all affected, like whether or not we were working throughout. I mean, this was something that kind of affected us globally. And I really was worried about my grandma a lot of times, and my family in the States while I was away in kind of a country that was more or less back to normal by the time I left. I really started to like measure what was important in my life, what the things that like maybe I started to sweat a little bit over, you know, stupid things, you know? And then when you realize that at the end of the day, that stuff doesn't matter. I think that was a big thing for me. And I felt really lucky that I was able to work, because I knew a lot of people that weren't, you know, a lot of people that I worked with. And so that was another thing. Like I just wanted I want the industry to continue to go back to normal. You know, I don't.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very good, it's an interesting sort of, I keep calling it a distiller. You know, distillery, mm-hmm,
yeah.
Also, which
yeah.
Most people have at home these days. But like, of this, you know, because there's all these rituals that go along with our careers, and especially you, again, having come off a massive one. All these rituals and behaviors and obligations and all that stuff that you've got to like pinball around.
Yeah, for sure.
And then when you stop, yeah, were you like for a minute like, oh, what do I do now? Like twitchy? Or just like, oh, okay.
You know, I think that twitchy feeling, for me, it saturates a little differently, where it's like kind of a big void of gray and then kind of a slink into like a kind of a place of anxiety and depression. But you don't understand what it's caused by. And it is that interruption of the speed.
Yeah.
And then I also think that you can go through that in periods when you're working, too. So I think that that's kind of what went on.
The other day I came in here, did a podcast, went, got my hair done, and I went home. And because I talked to like 15 different people, I felt like I had adrenal failure, because we're not used to that anymore. You know, like, what is it like with you as a performer as well? Having like, you're going on these big sets and then into this kind of isolated thing. Do you have to consciously rev yourself up, or are you just like, all right, let's go?
I don't think I've ever really had to rev up that much. I could never even imagine acting when I was younger. But the second it became serious, and like, if you didn't do it, then you'd be wasting all these people's time. That's when like I could rev up on the spot. But yeah, the only time I think I've seen some, like a lot of people at once, like when I was working and stuff, I think that it is a little jarring. You forget what it's like to be like really social, you know?
Well, in a couple of years, we'll be back to that. But what are you the most confident in as a performer, and what makes you nervy?
As an actress, as long as I know the lines, because that's the only thing that I can't bullshit or cover up with improv, or I need to know the lines. So it's like not doing your homework kind of thing. But what makes me, I think, nervy, it's every take is nervy, because sometimes when you do a good take, you're like, that was a sick take. Like I killed that, but no one else seems to think that around you. and then you're like, I don't know what's good. I don't know what's good or bad. I don't know the scale that they're thinking. I don't know. So I think that always makes you nervy. But what makes me nervy right now is like a place that I would get to that I would never be nervy. And then I would do the things that makes me nervy.
Right. I get that. Yeah. That when nervy eats itself. Yeah. When you just start gliding and don't ever have really invest anymore. You're shooting the Nora from Queens right now, right?
Yeah.
What's it like being a boss lady?
Oh man. Well, I mean, it's cool that I'm able to see what's kind of behind the curtain, but I think, I definitely don't feel like I am, because I feel like I'm surrounded by people who are very much in charge of what they're doing. And I think that part of being executive producer on anything is like, you have to trust the people around you, because then that's when you can drive yourself crazy, where you're like micromanaging. You can't micromanage like the art department. You know what I mean? Like, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. Right. So I just am really happy that I'm surrounded by professionals that understand. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm shadowing the whole experience, because I want to learn as much as I can right now, you know?
The word executive always makes me laugh. Like when you first, just because it's like, I'm an executive, you know, like being an executive producer, when you first were, you were like, yeah. How's it feel? Do you have to wear a jacket with a firm shoulder?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. It feels cool. It's funny you say that. Every time I think of the word executive, I think about this room that I stayed in the Days Inn in Montreal. It was called the Executive Suite. I just remember having this big table, and I was like, why do executives need a table?
Executives need a big table and a business center.
Yeah, they always need a business center with a R-E. It's always a C-E-N-T-R-E. Yeah, and there's always like a, you know, like a kind of a shitty printer.
Yeah, have you ever used a business center? That's not a center of business.
It smells more like a porno center. I think people were using more as a porno center. But yeah, I feel like it's not, business is the last thing I think people are doing in a hotel business center.
That printer's seen some shit.
The printer's like, can you just move me to another room? Do I have to be in the business center?
Someone get some Windex.
I need some, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How ambitious are you?
For my whole life, I convinced myself that I was not ambitious, and that I didn't have any, because I wasn't confronted with the things that I would eventually become ambitious for. I wasn't ambitious for school. I wasn't ambitious for competitive schooling, you know, like what, you know, the SATs. I wasn't ambitious for those. I wasn't ambitious for gym, freshman through senior year. I wasn't ambitious for anything. I battled with imposter syndrome, especially early on in my career. And like, this is the first year where like, I'm really starting to confront that in a real way, and in that I know that I work hard. I know that I do. That's the only thing that I do know. I don't know for sure that I'm good at what I'm doing, but I know for sure that I work hard, really hard. So like, if anything, at this point in my career, like I will say that yes, I am ambitious. There, I'll always be hungry. I always want more, and it's kind of nice.
Isn't that funny? Because like, for you to, I think that you are, I think a lot of people would agree with me, one of the more innately skilled actors, performers out there right now, that we can just tell that you always had it in you. And so for you to go, I feel like an imposter, isn't that just so ironic?
I guess. Thank you.
No, but for you to start with, like, you know, you're working at a publisher and you make this music video and you were just doing your stuff, and then you did your gigs, and you just incrementally, that whole has a very fluid path to it. But it is hard. I mean, when you have to look sort of inside and outside of yourself.
that's a part of it. But you don't learn from your successes. You know what I mean? You just don't.
You're going to do the Netflix show with Sandra. When is that?
Yeah.
When's that happening?
Oh, man. We're figuring it out right now, but it's definitely going to happen for sure. But I don't know when. Yeah, you'll be the first to know.
Would you? Yeah, thank you
yes,
so much. But
for sure.
Where's the division of your name happening? Is that still Awkwafina and Sandra Oh? You're like The Rock.
I don't know about that. The Rock is very cool.
When does The Rock become Dwayne? Your marketable name, well, your big name, you know, is Awkwafina. But then how conscious were, of course, Nora from Queens is loosely based on your life, so it has to be your name. But speaking of the bifurcation, here's your theme of the day.
I know, right?
How are you steering between the two right now?
It is very complicated, and I think it's a conversation that deals with, like, how I kind of internalize Awkwafina and how she affects like my own sense of identity, which has nothing to do with like the kind of the business or the, you know, like what should we credit her as. That has nothing to do with that. But then at the same time, it does, if that makes sense. My whole relationship with Awkwafina is different than I think what people initially think, which is that she represents like the kind of the funner version of you. So it's like Nora's the quiet one, and then Awkwafina's like the crazy one. And that's a good way to explain it, but it's not necessarily necessarily all of it. When I think about Awkwafina, I think about me being at a time in my life where I was chasing creative pursuits, and I thought of a name that was completely found in my own head, you know, from the spelling to like what it meant. And so when I see that name like on chairbacks or like coming up in credits, it kind of reminds me of like that 15-year-old that was like searching for something else, you know. And that's a name that, you know, Nora is a name that was given to me, and Awkwafina is a name I kind of chose for my own. So I think that's where that split is. But I also think that you kind of have to grow into the Dwayne Johnson or that kind of thing, because you have to put in your dues. You have to make like The Rock at this point, you know, people will know him as The Rock or Dwayne Johnson. But for me, if you put out a movie starring Nora Lumb, you know, people might not know who that is. So then what does that mean? It just keeps going in different layers for sure.
But and you and The Rock are often confused physically. So, I mean, it's double.
Exactly.
There's another layer to that. Tell me about a time when you first really owned your shit professionally. Like when you really had ownership and was like, all right, this is how I do it.
I think one of the first times I felt, I think in acting, it was probably one of my first scenes with John Chu and Crazy Rich Asians, where like I had come off of a really awesome filming experience, Ocean's 8, with like all those amazing
losers.
Women, which was,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's horrible.
Loser fest. Yeah, so sad.
That's what we were going to call it. but that was an amazing experience, but I felt like I was definitely uncomfortable in my skin, not at anyone else's fault. It was just at where I was in my career at that time. But then when Crazy Rich Asians came out, it was, I think that I was able to kind of explore and do some things that I had really felt scared to do previously, and then seeing that it was kind of received in a way that encouraged me to do more, that was when I first felt, wow, like it's cool that like I can do this, and it's like being seen on the other side and it's being encouraged.
Hey everyone, I'm Sid Evans, editor-in-chief of Southern Living and host of Biscuits and Jam. Since 2020, I've been interviewing musicians, chefs, authors, and other Southern icons about their family traditions, their faith, their favorite meals, and of course, what it means to be Southern. And I'm excited to announce season 5 of our award-winning podcast. Join me every Tuesday for new conversations with some of the most interesting and influential Southerners around. Be sure to follow Biscuits and Jam wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us online at southernliving.com/biscuitsandjam.
Welcome back to Ladies First with me, Laura Brown. This week I'm chatting with the glorious Nora Lumb, aka Awkwafina. It's kind of like The Rock and Dwayne Johnson.
Now, Nora from Queens, how much are you still obviously mining your early life, but how much of your life now are you mining for drama's sake or something else you want to do going forward? Do you write notes? Do you like, are you a big scribbler? Are you?
No, I'm not. I mean, sometimes if I think about a joke, I'll write it, but then I won't remember where I wrote it, and I'll throw it away or something. But I think a big thing in like writing the show is every year and every month that passes by, I'm more and more disconnected from that time when I was really struggling in New York City at that specific time. And being back in New York, it always kind of helps, you know, revive it a little bit. But I think that the overall theme of it is that I think that Nora and me, Nora, is like we're all still trying to figure out what gives us that sense of self rather than like what is prescribed to us, you know? And I think in the early beginning, it was get a good job, make good money, you know, do that thing, make your parents happy, which I still want to do, but I want to do my thing too.
I think a lot of people look at you and think, if only she'd get a good job.
Exactly. Yes.
Just wasting your time and wasting ours.
Exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of a good job, is that vegan bodega you used to work at? Is that still there?
Yeah, I just visited it last week.
Do they have a picture of you like in those pizza places with the celebrities in the back?
No. they have my sticker up in the front still. That's cute.
What do you get from the vegan bodega?
All kinds of kombuchas. That you can do a shake.
Are you vegan, by the way?
I'm not. I'm not a vegan. Are you? Are you vegan?
I'm a farmer's daughter, baby. There's no veganism. I would be flung from the family.
I've tried. I've tried raw vegan. I've tried it for like 47 minutes. I've tried one meal of raw vegan.
It's not good on the tongue.
It's not raw vegan?
Well, no, I'm just saying kale, all that stuff in the stomach is sometimes doesn't end well. Speaking of roughage, who have you encountered actor-wise or talent-wise who you've either met or worked with that you've gone, oh, that's that when I was 8 years old, I never could have conceived that I would have met this person?
All of the cast of Ocean's 8, I mean, I think that was for sure. I think my life is a constant thing of that, like meeting like Alice and Janney, who I just did a movie with, and Wanda Sykes, who I was able to do a bunch of. These are all women that I have definitely worshipped growing up. One woman also that I was a big fan of that I was able to work with was Ellen Barkin.
She's something else.
She's a Queens girl, you know, and I haven't really met a lot of people where it's like, don't meet your heroes kind of thing. I think like the majority of women that I've met, they've fulfilled that and more.
And for you, because again, I mean, you were the first Asian American who ever won an acting Globe, correct?
It was the first Asian American woman to win a lead act in Best Comedy or Musical. Yeah.
So then now you're a precedent setter, hopefully. And how representative do you feel you have to be, or is how representative do you think people want you to be?
That's always a conundrum when it comes to that question. And I have this joke that I've told so many times. It's like, if I was on my deathbed and I was like, I don't want to represent them, I would still be representing them in that moment. You know what I mean? Because that's what it is. With everything I do, there is an aspect of representation. And as an artist, that's a kind of a hard pill to swallow, because sure, everything great that happens to me can be celebrated. But what about all the bad things that I do? Like, I'm human, you know? But I also think I've come to a pretty good place where I know that I'm comfortable with that responsibility of knowing that. And I think that if I signed up for this, at the very least, I can accept that responsibility and what comes with it, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting because you obviously are unusual because of your talent and for how you've been rewarded, but I'm sure you want to be less unusual when it comes to others being rewarded and recognized. But I know it is crazy. It's like, okay, I guess it's me.
No.
You and Sandra. You and Sandra rolling up your sleeves and your bandanas every day.
You know, that news was like, it's kind of bittersweet. You know, it's cool to be the first, but it's also like in that context, it's like, I just hope that there's always going to be more, you know?
Yeah. You're like, that's cool, but how am I the first? Tell me, did you meet Lucy Liu in the end?
Yeah, I did. She was one of my actual comedy heroes. And I remember asking my grandma, being like, Grandma, do you think I'll ever be able to meet Lucy Liu? When I was a kid, I like, really? So then when I finally met her, I think she's just really cool. And it was a very warm meeting where like we were able to just kind of like talk about stuff, and there wasn't a lot of like nervousness. She made it go away. So that's nice.
She sent me to an acupuncturist before. She's always the one to go like, I've got a doctor.
Yeah. Do you like acupuncture?
I mean, occasionally. But she's the sort of person that if she says, this is an idea, you go, yes.
Yes, I'll do that. Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Yes, Lucy Liu.
Yes. I'll do anything.
I'll do anything you say. So tell me about that. What's happening with any music stuff? Is that any of that bubbling, or how is this whole like melange of what's that? What are those globes in the bedroom that the go blah 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 blah?
The Himalayan salt lamp.
Lava lamp.
Oh, a lava lamp.
I just thought of your brain like a lava lamp. So go with me. So what's at the top of the lava lamp? What's where does the music fit in, and where's music fitting in the blob of your brain right now?
Making music for me is like very therapeutic. It's like I do that almost every day, every night. I come home and I'll, you know, open one of my programs and I'll just do that all night. That was how I got into it. So I don't have anything concrete coming up. For me, when I'm paying attention to something, I have to give it my all. So like right now, there's like really not a lot of room for it. So I think that, you know, it'll always exist in my life. I just have to figure out.
Yeah, I think this should be My Vag, What Happened? People want to know.
My next single is going to be called My Vag, What Happened?
My Vag. Yeah. My Vag, colon. Oh, dear. My Vag, colon.
Colon. My Vag, colon. Oh, man.
What is an ideal day for you? Like, if you really just had your druthers all day, what would you do?
my ideal day is waking up without feeling too upset that I woken up, like at a time where I feel like I'm not being cheated of sleep by anyone.
Right.
So it's like waking up and feel like, and then, you know, having time to like have a nice breakfast, like wait for it to come.
Yeah, exactly. Someone brings it to you.
Like the seamless comes and it's not like 50 to 75 minutes and it comes and then I'm able to have my coffee and I can sit and then I can watch some TV and really just no stress and like I don't have to be anywhere, you know? I woke up nice today.
You woke up nice because you look real pretty. What are you watching on TV?
So I just signed up for everything that I love about TV, which is like Discovery Plus. It's everything. It's like Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe, which I loved. And then like every 90 Day Fiancé, 90 Day Fiancé, like Quarantine Tales, 90 Day Fiancé, all of it, before and after, all of it, happily ever, all of it. But then I started watching Bling Empire.
Did you get on like the Bridgerton train?
Not yet. So like for those, I like to wait. I like to wait. Like I just saw The Matrix, you know?
So you were like, wow, that bullet came and he just dodged it. What's next for you, Star Wars?
Well, I have seen that. But yeah, no, I think next I might, you know, maybe Boogie Nights or something.
Yeah. You got to go back through the lexicon. You got to go back. Hang on. What's your ideal breakfast?
Something with potatoes in it. Like a home fry potato with some like little like red peppers and some onions in it, like all in the thing.
What's your ideal dinner?
Like a juicy chicken where like you just pull it and it comes right off and mash. And again, working in the potatoes, like you could take those home fries from earlier and you can just reskillet them for me. I don't even need you to mash them or.
I mean, they are an incredible source of potassium.
Is that why they call them potato? Because of potassium?
I don't know. I just was smug that I knew there was potassium in them, which helps with foot cramps.
You ever been driving and then all of a sudden you get a Charlie horse in one foot? Has that ever happened to you and you feel you're going to crash?
One, can't drive. Two, I've had a Charlie horse, but only of the thigh. What happened when you got the Charlie horse when driving? You're still here to tell a tale, so that's good.
I was on the I-87 driving home from school to New York City from Albany. And I had Charlie horse and I was like, this is it. Because then I had to drive with my foot. It was not lit. And then I was like, you know what? I'll use the other foot. Don't use the other foot. Don't use that other foot. That other foot does not know what it's doing. It's not a good designated driver.
It's not supposed to be there. Oh, you're still here though. Oh, thank God. Long story short, if you eat more potato.
Yes.
This will happen to you less. Okay. You ready for this? It's called 10 firsts. Okay. First time you knew you were funny?
Oh, wow. I made like an older Asian uncle laugh and he was so hard to make laugh. Like I didn't even think he was capable of smiling.
Do you remember what you said?
I don't think I said anything. I think I like pretended, you know, to like talk behind someone's back.
And he went, oh, oh.
Yeah, something like that.
I feel like older men just go, oh, oh.
Yeah. You know what yeah. I mean? They laugh more like with their diaphragm.
Do you still do fart jokes, including farts, for your grandma?
If I can get the timing right, I mean, the older you get, the harder it is to really channel them, I think. I think when I was, like, in elementary school, it was really easy.
It was peak.
My grandma was like, you know what, don't eat, because you don't do it like you used to.
How is your grandma anyway?
She's so good. My grandma's really good.
Has she had the shot?
Not yet. No, not yet.
How much have you been able to see of her? Obviously, you were away a ton, but when you came back, were you like sort of bubbling or did you want to just throw yourself on top of her?
Yeah, I did. Because I hadn't seen her in so long, you know? But like when I first got here, I was like really scared because of that. I did the full quarantine here and then I got like, you know, I got a lot of tests because I wanted to make double sure. And then also I made sure that like, you know, she was all good too. And then when we saw each other, it was really nice because I haven't seen her in like so long. And all she wants to do is like, so we're going to go to the mall. And it's like, no, we're not, we can't go to the mall, Grandma. I'll hang out with you here.
How proud of you is she? And what are her sort of milestones to her? Because they're always different than the ones for you, I'm sure. when she thought you'd made it in some way? What were her kind of markings?
Well, my vag. She always says that that was the best video I've ever made. And she's seen my videos. I put it out. But she's like, not as good. The other day, she saw my Super Bowl commercial and she was like, all right, is that it? And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, you have no more, right? And I'm like, no, just that one. And she was like, all right, I'm going to sleep. And she went to sleep.
Okay. First time you knew you wanted to be an entertainer.
Maybe I think when junior high school band, we used to play like all the 90s hits that my band teacher loved. So we played like Live in La Vida Loca. We played like a Mark Anthony song, Hero. And I remember I'd have a lot of solos where like, and when you have solos in band, you stand up and then like the student volunteer shines a light at you. And I remember thinking that felt really cool.
So yeah. Now you just bring your own ring light everywhere.
Yeah.
Just,
I'm exactly.
Here. I'm here.
Yeah.
So if you turn off the lights before you go to sleep, do you start crying? Because there's no spotlight.
No, I actually do have the one lone spotlight just on me while I sleep, you know. It's like everything else is blackened and it's just me like sleeping.
Okay. First fan experience.
I was working at the bodega and my second video had just, well, it didn't go viral, but like it that day it got a lot of views. And a guy came in, like an older white guy came into the bodega and was like, you Awkwafina? And I was like, yes. And then he was like, okay, just making sure. And then he left. And then I was like, cool. That was cool.
Okay, first music video. What was the first music video you made, maybe even like less, you know, for yourself that didn't go out there?
My vag. Like that was the first time I had been filmed on a camera. Well, I mean, when I was little, like home videos, whatever. But yeah.
What were you doing? You had a job, right?
I had a job. I was working at like a publishing company. And I called my friend Maya and I was like, Maya, can you come and help me with this video? And she was like, yeah, sure. And she was the legs and she was upset. Because she was like, you didn't tell me this is what we were doing. And also, like, why am I on a board? And we're like, because it's, you know, it's part of the gag.
First joke you remember. There's any joke you used to tell as a kid or a shtick you had?
It was some joke with two kids that get lost in the woods named Shut Up in Trouble. And then a man finds them and he's like, what's your name? And he's like, shut up. And he's like, you looking for trouble? And he's like, yes. See, it still slaps.
That slaps hard. And that's, you know what? It's elegant. It's concise. Oh, first fashion splurge and most recent. Yeah.
First fashion splurge. I bought a Gucci purse in Barcelona.
What was the first date you ever went on?
My first date was probably in junior high school. I don't think I went on dates back then. Maybe at a McDonald's. You know, but that, I don't think that's a date rather than just going to where everyone hung out after school.
I love McDonald's. Is that
right? No, I love McDonald's. I still, yeah.
Oh my God. Thank God. So thank God you haven't turned into one of these ladies that's always on there.
You really think there are people that will never eat McDonald's even when they're like on a
yes.
road trip?
There's a lot of them and they're smug about it. Like I would never. And I'm like, bitch, I have like a freaking sausage.
You don't have to eat it every day.
McMuffin is the best.
Because you remember when you were little and your parents like brought you to McDonald's and you smelled it. You know what I mean?
I used to have birthday parties there.
Me too. Me too. To this day, they were my best birthday parties. Like they were like a hit. You know
Did
what
you
I mean?
Get the cake, the ice cream cake.
All of it with the booster seats with the purple guy and the burglar and all that. You remember that?
I'm pretty sure the booster seats are up there with the printer in the business center in terms of hygiene. Last question. This is it, sister. First thing you'll do when this goddamn pandemic is over.
Oh, man. Go to Korean barbecue with my friends. Karaoke, something like that.
Just eat all the meats. Nora, you're really the best. And I'm just so glad because we've been friendly, but I've never, it's weird that we're really chatting for the first time on a podcast.
You're hilarious. I haven't laughed this hard in like a really long time. it's been a while.
You're so appreciated. It's so wonderful to see your success rising and rising and rising from being entirely yourself and creating what you do so legitimately and with such feeling. And to see you show up on a video, on a screen, on a stage at the Golden Globes, it does warm the heart.
Thanks, Laura. Yeah, this was so fun. Yeah, thank you.
This has been Ladies First with Laura Brown. We can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to our production team at Pod People, Rachel King, Matt Savarese, Danielle Roth, Anne Ford, Anne Kane, and Erica Wong. And thanks to Brian Anstey, Molly Stout, and Hayley Mason at InStyle. You can find out more at InStyle.com. Find us on Instagram at InStyle Magazine, on Twitter at InStyle, and you can find me on Insta and Twitter at Laura Brown 99.